Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Laurie Beth Jones Blog Talk Radio Show. We have as our guest today a gentleman from that hails from Mississippi, and just listening to him talk is like warm butter with a little bit of honey. But the words that he's going to speak to us today about the church and his passion for the church will touch and warm your heart. Welcome to William Johnson Garrett, Jr. He's a native Mississippian with a BA from the University of Mississippi and an MDiv from Emory University. He's an elder in the Mississippi Conference of the United Methodist Church and a general evangelist within UMC. He has served as chair for continuing education and dean of the pastor school in the conference, and he has led his first Methodist church plant team to Belarus in 2002. He's executive director of the 4M Foundation, an organization devoted to mission leadership development. He is passionate about the Walk to Emmaus and has started it in the Ukraine. And he has 4M partnerships in West Africa in 30 churches. He leads 10 pastor schools, and he helped birth a college mission movement that is centered around the Rafiki Orphanage in Ghana. His work with the States is focused around evangelism, mission, and church planting. He and his wife, Jennifer, have two sons, Brian and Joel. They live in Senatobia, Mississippi, and he can be reached at jgarrott, J-G-A-R-R-O-T-T, 4, at AOL.com. So with all that being said, welcome, John.
Thank you, Laurie Beth. It's great to be with you.
Well, I first met John at a Lyft conference, which was held in San Diego, to reach pastors' hearts and to encourage them and to lift them up. And today we're going to talk about what it means to be a missional church. And some of the questions that are on John's heart today are the power of positive prophecy in young people. So let's talk about that first. What does that mean to you, and what does it mean to the church itself?
Well, Laurie Beth, I first got onto that term through the path, through your book that I still have a copy of, bought it when it first came out, and it was very meaningful in my life. The prophecy is one of those areas that we don't see a lot of in the West, and there's a lot of room for error in it, but nonetheless, when it's spoken and it's real and it's authentic and it's positive, which it most of the case it tends to be, unless it's spoken to power, and that's a different thing. But it's a powerful, powerful, life-changing event, particularly for young people. And so I was really taken by that phrase, positive prophecy, and trying to, mind that right now, and glad to talk with you about it.
Well, prophecy is a term that people... they either think it relates to the end of the world, or mm-hmm. they relate it to kooks.
That's true.
Right. And yet, in my book, The Power of Positive Prophecy, I was astounded by how many prophets there are. Doctors are prophets. Stockbrokers are prophets. Anybody who foretells the future or tries to is really a prophet. So how does this impact young people today?
Well, I think there are two routes that you can go. One is the... to try to set up events and mechanism where you can bring positive, life-changing people, mentorships, but more than that, environments where what the people call in a sin of a leader, environments of grace. I think that's a beautiful term, where those kind of positive directions in life, that their strengths can be affirmed, who they are can be celebrated under God's grace, and also something specific for their future, whether it's a profile like the profiles that you're doing, or just a positive word that you're really good at this and God could really use you. That kind of thing young people are hungry for, and it takes, it really takes root.
Well, and, they're surrounded by so many negative prophecies.
Absolutely.
What I tell people, and I'm sure you believe, is that your children are being prophesied to every day.
So, absolutely.
They're being told they're too skinny, they're too ugly, they're too anything that is less than what the world seems to want. And so how important it is for people in the church to come alongside them and speak directly to them. And one of the things I found in my research for my book was that pastors were like number four on the list of people who had spoken positive prophecies into their life that changed their life direction for the better.
Just a quick short story. We were involved in the inner city work a couple of years ago, and were able to sponsor kids in the urban area out to one of our summer camps. The kids, they picked them up and they took them back. And Laura Beth, it was so, you know, without going into all the detail, but they spoke up and said, "We don't, you know, we want to stay here." They were in such a strong environment of grace, and you know, again, without going into their environment background, but from going from negative prophecy to an environment of grace where they were affirmed and loved, they didn't want to go home. And pretty, you know, that you remember stuff like that, and
right.
It affected all the adults that were working with them.
Right. So let's move to the next question. We could obviously go on about this for a long time, but we have a lot to cover.
Sure.
The effectiveness of the profiles for Christian leadership. What did you mean by that?
Well, I was blessed to sit through your presentation to Methodist leadership and clergy in California. And the use of those things opens a door for clergy, most of which of us, we didn't get that in seminary. I mean, we don't. Mm. Matter of fact, we're not trained to major on the majors. We're in a system that demands us to be good at everything,
right?
Which is a myth. You know, there was a beautiful article came out here recently by a Methodist clergy wife and also therapist, and she talked about the myth of competency. The myth of competency, and I've never heard it put any better than that. And what the profiles allow in us is a chance to grasp what God has endowed us with and made us good at, and at the same time being able to realize we need other people around us.
We
really need other people, and that's as old as the church. You know, that's really what church is about. But we're trained to look in the other direction.
So what was your profile? What do you think you are? Or what,
you know,
are you?
I think in the profiles that you're using, I'm guessing the fire. I'm pretty sure it is. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
That's great. Now your third question, I really want to dive into.
Okay.
The quickly changing leadership scene in the American church.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Methodist General Conference is going on now, or maybe has
That's
just
right.
completed. And
no,
we're
right in the middle of it.
In the middle of it. And so what is going on in the American church?
Well, part of that can be located in the fact that the American church itself is quickly changing. And Sally Morgenthaler has done some really nice work in being able to distinguish between the actual people that are actually going to church and the ones that respond to a Gallup question. And the percentages are way, way down from what they were 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. I mean, it's been a precipitous drop. So the church is really changing. Our leadership is trying to get a handle on that. Whether or not we are flexible enough to adapt, that's an open-ended question right now. And I think we will. I'm positive about things. It's just that the change rate is really, really fast, and it's intimidating, but it can also be exciting. I'm excited, but it's changing rapidly.
Now, her work, it's Sally Morgenthaler?
Morgenthaler. Last name ends with
T-H-A-L-E-R. And is there a published report that people can link on to?
Yeah, she's written several books. She came, I don't want to misquote her but the or the background, but she's got some really nice stuff, and her last name is Morgan with a M-O-R-G-E-N and then T-H-A-L-E-R is the last name.
The changing American Church. So
she's written some really good stuff about that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So quickly, what are some statistics that stuck out for you?
Well, you know, we like to think of church attendance in this country being at 70 or 80%. The actual figure for Protestants is 17. 17% of all Americans on a given Sunday morning in that claim a Protestant persuasion are in church on a regular basis. So that's when you widen it out to the Roman Catholics, it goes out to about 24. But that's pretty sobering stuff.
Wow. So the people who are saying we need to grow our churches. Does that mean getting more people in the pews by changing the music, or what does that mean?
You know, that we used to think that, and people have realized simply changing the music is not the silver bullet. That's a great question. You know, institutions tend to want to perpetuate themselves, and so you've got that dynamic in there, and so the motivation to simply grow the organization is very strong, and there's some error attached to that. But that is a great question, and really really good people are struggling with that right now, and we're going to have to lean on God to kind of sort it all out for us.
Right. I made kind of a bold assertion that I feel like the UMC is an earth water organization based on its tendency to not be the five. They don't grab the microphone, you know, like maybe the Baptists or the Pentecostals, the far extreme right evangelicals do. And I think it costs us somewhat. I mean, I think it costs us a lot. So we tweeted this and someone tweeted back to me and they said, then should we take the flame out of the UMC logo? And
oh,
I
goodness.
That was interesting.
Mm. Wow. That's pretty strong. I've done about 150 profiles on colleagues and clergy, and you're exactly right. But particularly the higher up, so to speak, in the connection you go, the more alike people tend to be. And
right.
So the more of a kind of a silo effect you have, you only speak to people and listen to people that are already telling you what you already know.
Right.
And you're exactly right, and I do think it's primarily a water culture, and that's a wonderful thing. The water
it is.
You have to have the nurturers, you know,
right.
And the sustainers.
Right.
But if that's all you have, you know, eventually the circle disappears of what there is to nurture, and
turns into a swamp.
Yes, that's right. We need the other part.
Well, yes, I love what you said that you have profiled top leadership, and I would like to dialogue with you about that more. Perhaps we can schedule another private conversation. I think it is so imperative that we understand our culture and the culture of the leadership, because an organization can't outgrow its leadership.
No, Jennifer and I raised our boys close to Keesler Air Force Base where the hurricane hunters were. And they had the military men and women had a slogan out there. They called it speed of the leader, speed of the troops. And it's really true. Organization cannot outgrow its leadership. That's exactly right. Speed of the leader,
speed of the leader, speed of the troops. John, this is fascinating. And the wisdom that you have goes so deep. I can hear it in your measured tone. You have harnessed that fire to be productive instead of destructive.
I really look forward to
speaking with you more. And
we'll look forward to that.
Thank you. Listeners, please check out Jay Garrott, GARROTT4, at, what is it, AOL?
At AOL.
Mm-hmm. At AOL.com. Thank you so much, John, for the work that you're doing, and I look forward to continued dialogue with you.
Thank you, Laura Beth. God bless.
Bless you. Bye-bye.